You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey guys, welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. It's all O's all the time. As always, I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm the former Major League Baseball editor for Sporting News, and I'm a former Cy Young and Rookie of the Year voter. Most importantly, though, I'm a lifelong Orioles fan. Guys, this weekend, six men are going to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and that includes two former Orioles, Jim Thome and Vlad Guerrero. But we all know that those guys had short and relatively undistinguished careers in Baltimore, and they're being inducted because of their contributions to other teams. So it got me thinking, who is the next Oriole who's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame? We haven't had an Oriole go in since 2007, when Cal Ripken Jr. was inducted in his first year of eligibility. We know that there's nobody on the current Orioles who's going to be a Hall of Famer, especially now that Manny Machado's been dealt. But there are some guys who spent a long time in Baltimore who are still eligible for the Hall of Fame and could go in at some point. So today we're joined by a Hall of Fame expert. Graham Womack is a Sabre member who's written extensively on the Hall of Fame for various publications, and he's here to talk to us about Mike Mussina, Bobby Grich, and other former Birds who have a chance to go into Cooperstown one day. We'll get to that conversation in just a second. Hey folks, just a reminder, for all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And of course, for all your content on the Baltimore Orioles, make sure to go to LockedOnOrioles.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Graham Womack. Graham is a member of Sabre, and he's a guy who knows a lot about the Baseball Hall of Fame and has written about it extensively for several publications, including Sporting News, which is where Graham and I first got to know each other. And Graham, I wanted to talk to you today because the Hall of Fame induction ceremony is this weekend, and there's two, I'm joking with people, there's two former Orioles going in, Vlad Guerrero and Jim Thome. But of course, we know those guys are going in because of their contributions to other teams, not because of what they do with the Orioles. So it got me thinking about where we are, historically as a franchise with the Orioles in terms of the Hall of Fame. There are five players and one manager who are in the Hall of Fame as Orioles. And the most recent one was Cal Ripken Jr., who went in 2007. I said in the introduction to this podcast that there's no current Orioles, obviously, who have any kind of chance at the Hall of Fame, especially now that Manny Machado is gone. But there is one guy in particular I want to talk to you about, and then we'll get into some others. But Mike Mussina is a guy who obviously had a long career with the Orioles and then several years with the Yankees as well. And he's a guy who has been the center of, I think, one of the more interesting Hall of Fame conversations in recent years. And in fact, his support among the baseball writers has gone up every year. And he's now getting into that range where it looks like he's going to be a Hall of Famer within a few years, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was looking at it either today or yesterday, and he's at like 63% of the vote. I mean, that's the kind of territory that once you're there, it's a pretty short shot to 75%. Really, the only player who has gotten in that range and who isn't in is Gil Hodges. I mean, Mussina, to me, it's not a question of if he's in, and it's a question of when. And then also a question of what hat he'll be wearing. I mean, it'd be great to see him go in as an Oriole, but I could also see him going as a Yankee, given the amount of years that he spent in New York.
Well, this is a conversation I've had on Twitter with a lot of people, because there's obviously a lot of Yankees fans out there who like Mussina and would like to see him going as a Yankee. But I've made the argument that if you look at his numbers, he pitched longer for the Orioles, he had more wins, a better ERA, more All-Star appearances, more Cy Young votes, you know, just basically everything you could look at except World Series appearances, he had more of with the Orioles. And I think it would be historically inaccurate to put him in as a Yankee. I'll put you that way. The one thing that I wonder about, though, is we know Greg Maddux, Tony La Russa, and a few other players, and the Catfish Hunter, have gone in with a hat with no logo. I'm wondering if Mussina, given that he spent, you know, a considerable amount of time with both these teams, might go that route when he gets in.
Potentially. I mean, one thing, as you were just talking, one thing that was kind of flashing in my mind is, I mean, you really, at least for me, like, I associate Mike Mussina as a staff ace from his years in Baltimore. I mean, obviously with the Yankees, I mean, he had that tremendous final season, I want to say, where he won 20 games his last year. And he had some great years there, but to me, Mussina never stood out as much in the Yankee rotation as much as he did in Baltimore. I mean, there were years in the 90s where Mussina practically was the Orioles, you know, rotation with respect to, like, Ben McDonald. I mean, there would be no shame in Messina going in with just an Orioles hat. But I mean, you could make the argument too for a blank hat. I mean, that wouldn't be too offensive if it happened.
Well, I think it would be offensive to people listening to this podcast. This is an Orioles podcast, and Orioles fans, in my experience, despite the fact that he left as a free agent for the Yankees, which you feel like would really sour fans on him, you know, Baltimore fans on him, I don't get that sense at all. I think Orioles fans have embraced him and really, you know, look back fondly on his years in Baltimore. And I think, you know, people kind of understand why he did it. The Orioles then, as now, were mismanaged so badly that it really made sense for him to move on to a team that was going to be more competitive. And so I think people kind of have forgiven him for the sin of going on to the Yankees.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when's the last time that the Orioles really had a crack front office? I mean, are we talking like the years of like Harry Dalton back in like, what would that be, like the 60s or the 70s? I mean, it's, you look at like the ownership of like Peter Angelos and just, you know, the other kind of front office cogs over the years. I mean, the Orioles are a team that you can't really blame the players as much. There's just been so much mismanagement there.
Yeah, well, believe me, that has been the topic of many podcasts on Locked On Orioles. So we'll avoid that for now and stick to more happier topics, I'll put you that way. So the one question I did have about Messina, it's interesting. He's a really interesting case to me of kind of how sabermetrics and the analytical revolution has changed our approach to the Hall of Fame. Because Messina is a guy, I think if you look at his support versus his non-support, it's very clearly down the middle of the sabermetric types. The people who really are into, you know, advanced analytics are very much in support of Messina being a Hall of Famer. Maybe the more old school guys who use the more traditional stats haven't been as supportive of him, and that's maybe one of the reasons he has taken a few years to get in. Because if you look at it, his ERA is a little bit high, but that's really a lot of that is explained by when and where he pitched, right? I mean, he pitched in the 90s and the 2000s in the American League East, including in Baltimore at a time when it really was homer friendly in the 90s. So he, you know, his ERA is a little bit inflated, but I think if you look at his, you know, his ERA plus, it's really good. And of course, he never won a Cy Young, and he only won 20 games, I think, his last year with the Yankees. Never won it with the Orioles, although he won 19 several times. So do you think that's accurate, that it's in some ways this is sort of a triumph of the sabermetric approach to really recognize him as a great pitcher as he was?
Yeah, I mean, Messina's not the first candidate of this type. I really liken him to Burt Blyleven. I think there's a lot of similarities between the two of them as candidates. And so I think, you know, Blyleven's induction kind of paved the way for a guy like Messina. But it's funny, though. I mean, you look at Messina, sabermetrically, to me, he's a slam dunk candidate. I mean, I think he's got like 83 war. Yeah, I don't have his wins above average in front of me, but I think it's either like 40 or 50, which is pretty safely over the range. I mean, by sabermetrics, you know, he's arguably, you know, a first-tier Hall of Fame pitcher. Now, if you go by more traditional measures, yeah, it's like he's short of 300 wins. His ERA, you know, is up around 370. He wasn't a guy who was striking out, you know, 250, 300 guys a year. I mean, I don't know if there's a ton of Hall of Fame pitchers who really check all those boxes, but I think, you know, there is a school of voters. I've talked to some of these guys before who are like, yeah, you know, if you have to think about somebody's Hall of Fame candidacy, they're not a Hall of Famer. And I take issue with that, but there are plenty of voters who, you know, have, at least in the past, have operated that way. I think we're seeing less of that these days, but it does still happen.
Yeah, I know my friend and former colleague, Jesse Spector, is in that camp with Messina, and it's kind of a little sticking point with me. I think he doesn't. In some ways, I think it's funny because he sort of looks at Messina more in his Yankee years, like you were saying, and isn't looking as much as the Orioles years when he was kind of a true ace and an all-star caliber pitcher. But in any case, I think you're right. He's going to be going in soon, so hopefully he'll be going in as an Oriole, because I plan to go to Cooperstown if he does. And if he goes in as an Oriole, he will get his number retired and get a statue in Baltimore. So that would be I think that's something he's not necessarily going to get in New York. He's, you know, so we'll see about that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you figure in New York, he's red roughing, but yeah, for the Orioles, that'd be a big deal.
All right. So Messina is the most obvious one, but there's other players who have strong Hall of Fame candidacies, who had impactful careers with the Orioles. And one who came to mind for me is a guy that I know you've interviewed before, and he's another guy who is a sabermetric favorite. He's a guy who didn't get a lot of attention. I think he went off after the first ballot for the baseball writers, but he's come up on some veterans committee lists and that sort of thing. And again, a lot of the sabermetrically inclined people really like his candidacy, and that's Bobby Gritch. And people remember him. He played for the Orioles early in his career and then had a long career with the Angels after that. I'm old enough that I remember him mainly as an Angel. I don't really remember his Orioles career. But I was looking at his stats recently for something I was doing. And he played more years with the Angels, but he had his more impactful years with the Orioles. Early in his career, in the mid-70s, he was very, very good for the Orioles. He was a guy, an excellent defensive player who drew a lot of walks, had some power. And like I said, I know you've talked to Gritch. What are your feelings on Gritch as a Hall of Fame candidate?
He might be the most underrated Hall of Fame candidate right now. I mean, as you said, he was only on one writer's ballot. I think he got 2.6% of the vote, something pitifully small. And then, I could be wrong on this, but actually I've researched kind of the veteran and era committee ballots a bit. I don't think he's actually been a candidate yet on any of their ballots. I mean, he went off the writer's ballot in like 1992, and I mean, he's been eligible probably for at least 10 years, I want to say, for the veteran or era committee. I'm kind of using those terms interchangeably because, I mean, the Hall of Fame sort of kept changing up sort of the structure and kind of the format for it. But I mean, the thing that hasn't changed is he is still not recognized. I mean, I personally led kind of a little minor campaign for him, and there's other people as well, you know, like Jay Daff and other people. I mean, Gritch is well known in the sabermetric community kind of for what he brings. I mean, Bill James was talking about his Hall of Fame candidacy back in the 80s, but unfortunately it's like, if for the average everyday fan, you know, Gritch has a lifetime 266 batting average. The average fan doesn't really know how to contextualize for it. I know one thing Gritch was telling me about when I interviewed him was he's talking about, you know, playing at like, you know, Memorial Stadium and then playing in Anaheim. You know, both of those, both two parks that were really hard to hit in at night. I mean, you know, I think both parks, you kind of had the marine layer of air that just made it really difficult for balls to carry, you know, in the evening.
Yeah, absolutely. Memorial Stadium was definitely a stadium that could have some effect on your batting average as well as your homers. It was more of a pitcher stadium for sure, and that affects it. The interesting question with him, like with Messina, is do you think my gut instinct would be that if he does go in, and I think he will go in one day, and it may take a while, but I think eventually common sense is going to come around. If he goes in, do you think he's likely to go in as an Angel rather than an Oriole, right?
I would assume, although, yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, you can make the case that, like, his years with the Orioles, I forget if it was him or Davey Johnson was part of, like, I think Johnson might have still been starting in 73, but you have some of those years of Orioles teams, you could make the case they might have been the greatest infield in baseball history. I mean, you know, you have Mark Belanger, you have Brooks Robinson, you know, you have Johnson and then Gritch. I mean, Gritch, if he went in as an Oriole, I mean, it would kind of help bring a little more attention to that. But I do think if he gets in, it would probably be as an Angel. I mean, that's just, you know, you go to his baseball reference page, there's a picture of him wearing an Angels hat, and I might have had his baseball card with that back when I was a kid. So, yeah, I mean, I would assume he'd go in as an Angel.
I'm going to start a campaign for Bobby Gritch to go in as an Oriole. So, I don't know. Well, for whatever that matters. Probably won't make any difference. But, you know, it would certainly have been, again, I think if you look at his peak, he was better as an Oriole, but he certainly played longer with the Angels. And I think this is correct that is Guerrero the first player who's going in as an Angel? I think Vlad Guerrero maybe is the first player who's going in as an Angel.
Oh, man, that's a question. off the top of my head, I should that should be the next area that I research, is kind of knowing guys' hats on their Hall of Fame plaques. I'd have to look that up. I mean, that sounds right, but I also could have seen, you know, I mean, obviously Reggie Jackson didn't do it, but, you know, a guy like Nolan Ryan, like, sneaking it in or something, you know, just somebody who was on the Angels for a few years and then decided to do it as a stunt.
Well, maybe Nolan Ryan should have, probably, but he did go in as a Ranger. I know that. So,
Yeah, that's garbage. Yeah.
I'm sure, fairly sure Vlad's the first guy. We know Mike Trout will be coming someday to join him, but
Sure.
I don't know, but I think, Graham, you're probably the same way. I'm endlessly fascinated by stuff like that, like about who, you know, teams that are represented on the hats and which, how many players each team has and who the first guy was and all that stuff. Just always, I find it very interesting, even if a lot of people find it kind of minutia. I enjoy it.
I mean, there's a small group of people who are kind of like us, but I absolutely eat up the Hall of Fame minutia. I mean, that's like, I can kill weekends like researching it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I know that just back when, I think it was when Ken Griffey Jr. got in a couple years ago, I tweeted out that Griffey was the third member of the, you know, Springfield nuclear power plant softball team to get into the Hall of Fame, you know, just little things like that. And you know, got retweeted, you know, 500 times or something. There are definitely other people out there who like that kind of stuff.
Oh, totally. I've got to go to an event tomorrow that Steve Sachs will be at. And I know if I ever meet Steve Sachs, like the first question that I'm asking him is about, you know, all the murders in New York City that were pinned on him.
So. Right. All right. So let's move on. Besides Messina and Gritch, are there other players in your mind when you think about this stuff a lot with these guys who are off the writers' ballots and maybe would one day go in via, you know, a veterans committee or an era committee. Are there other players besides Gritch who had significant careers with the Orioles who you think have legitimate candidacies for the Hall of Fame?
I don't know if after Gritch there's really anybody who really stump hard for, but there's a few guys that you can at least mention. And probably the most obvious to me would be somebody like a Mark Belanger, who, you know, defensively one of the greatest shortstops in baseball history. Unfortunately, maybe also one of the worst bats. So it's like I've heard it said before that, you know, everything he got with the glove, he basically gave back with the bat. But, you know, it does kind of bring up an interesting debate, though. It's like, you know, can defense alone get a guy into the Hall of Fame? And he would be an interesting test case for that. I mean, yeah. Somebody like Ozzie Smith might have been that as well, but I think Smith had a little bit better of a bat and, you know, a little higher profile of an image. But I could see, I wouldn't be overly stunned if at some point down the road somebody like Belanger got in. Aside from them, the guys you could maybe make cases for, one obvious one could be somebody like a Dave McNally, who wouldn't necessarily be for his pitching, but it'd be like a combination of his pitching and then kind of his role in helping topple the reserve clause in baseball. Basically, you know, he and Andy Messersmith in 1975 were basically the two guys who were kind of, you know, central in the case that basically led an independent arbiter to abrogate the reserve clause. So McNally's kind of pitching prowess and his role in that could help get him in at some point. Aside from that, I'm trying to think. The Orioles are interesting. I mean, I don't know if they still have their 1890s franchise history or if that belongs to the like a team like the Brooklyn Dodgers. But I know, like, just in terms of names or in terms of name of the team, the kind of the greatest represented period of the Orioles is the 1890s. And it's been so long that basically all those guys have gotten in. I mean, you did have in recent years, you had guys like Ned Hanlon getting in the 90s. But yeah, it's hard to say beyond that. I apologize. I'm kind of rambling a bit, but I think the short answer to your question is, yeah, after Gritch, I don't know if there's too many Orioles who would really have, you know, a real serious case at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think there may be an interesting case to be made for their first manager, Paul Richards, who was kind of a very innovative guy and had a lot of, you know, success as a manager, but never really won the World Series, and I think that's probably going to keep him from getting in ultimately, which is probably the same thing about Buck Showalter, who's been a successful manager but never got to the World Series and certainly isn't going to get there this year. So that certainly hurts his case. He certainly has the longevity and you know, overall success, but I think lack of postseason success is probably going to end up hurting his candidacy.
Oh, sure. You get guys who, like, when I was a kid, I would have assumed that they were in, like, guys like Boog Powell, who he's got the name recognition. Offensively, kind of the peak value, but you look at his case sabermetrically, and it completely falls apart. Not to mention, I think he maybe got one Hall of Fame vote when he was on the writer's ballot. So, yeah, it's kind of slim pickings. But yeah, Richards he's definitely a good one. And then, yeah, Harry Dalton, I want to say, is another guy. He might have had his better years in Milwaukee, but I want to say Dalton was part of the Orioles front office.
Oh yeah,
at one
for
point.
Sure,
was pretty good.
And of course, there's several. You know, we mentioned Guerrero and Tomei. There's obviously guys who have Hall of Fame cases who had brief Orioles careers, and that includes a guy like Dwight Evans, who I think has a similar kind of, you know, a candidacy as Bobby Grich, a guy who is loved by the sabermetric crew, didn't necessarily get much support when he was on the ballot, and he had a brief Orioles career. Curt Schilling had a brief Orioles career, but probably the less said about his candidacy, the better at this point. And like another guy is Lee Smith, who had a brief Orioles career, and he is a guy who got, you know, pretty significant support from the writers, but, you know, fell short. I wonder how he will do on the Veterans Committee ballots. He had the saves, but probably not a sabermetric favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I have to assume Lee Smith will go in. I mean, he's going to be hitting those ballots just about the time that Mariano Rivera is on them. So, I mean, Rivera obviously is going to go in with the writers as soon as he's eligible, and I would see that helping Smith with the veterans group. I mean, obviously, by sabermetrics, they're nowhere close to the same closer. But I think for a more traditional-minded person, they'll be like, oh, well, you know, Mariano Rivera has 650 saves or 653, I want to say. And then, you know, Lee Smith, you know, he doesn't have that many. But, well, he almost had 500, and there was a point where he was a save leader. So we might as well put him in, too. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance Lee Smith will go in.
All right, Graham. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today. If people want to find your stuff, you want to give them your Twitter handle?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at GrahamDude. I will talk baseball history like anytime, any place. I mean, you tweet me a baseball history question, I can talk about it. And yeah, my quirk is that I can name all the Hall of Fame baseball players in under 15 minutes. If you ever have a question about the Hall of Fame, I'm your guy.
Say that Twitter handle again, because I think that we maybe had a little bit of a connection problem there when you said it. So just say that again real quick.
Oh, sure. It's GrahamDude. It's Graham, like Graham Cracker, and then Dude, just like, hey, dude. So yeah, GrahamDude, at GrahamDude.
Okay. And people should check that out. And I guess you'll be watching the Hall of Fame induction ceremony this weekend?
Oh, absolutely. I'm thrilled that Evan Trammell got in. Mine that Jack Morris got in. I mean, I'm more of a sabermetrics guy at heart, but I also think the Hall of Fame, I like it being representative of different types of, you know, different types of candidates and Hall of Famers. So yeah, my big thing this year was I was thrilled that Alan Trammell got in. And then, yeah, I mean, seeing the other guys getting in too, it's a pretty robust class this year.
Well, yeah, that's something I was going to mention earlier. I forgot, but I think Jack Morris getting into the Hall of Fame can only boost Messina's candidacy, as far as I'm concerned, because
absolutely. Yeah, Messina is such a better pitcher. I mean, and yeah, there's people who might try to tell you, well, based on the 1991 World Series, you know, Jack Morris gets the edge. But I mean, you just, if you look at just any number of different advanced stats, I mean, Mike Messina just trounces Morris, and that has to count for something.
And honestly, you don't even have to look so much as the advanced stats, even the traditional stats, Messina's better. He really, in almost every way. So anyway, we talked enough about Moose, and hopefully he'll be going into the Hall of Fame one of these years coming forward. Thanks a lot, Graham.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. Anytime, Jeff.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.